Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
There's a new push to change the drinking age in Australia from 18, lifting it to 21. Confronting statistics from the Dalgano Institute show one in five teenagers admit to regular binge drinking by the age of 16. By the age of 18, this number jumps to 50%. And it's estimated that this coming week, five Australian teenagers will die in a binge drinking related incident. This issue is well beyond what some might see as a wowserish push to stop people having fun. This is literally deadly serious. But don't underestimate the challenge this group will face trying to change the drinking age in Australia. But they've got the support of former Deputy Prime Minister Tim Fischer and World Vision CEO Tim Costello. They believe the change will save lives and reduce the carnage. Maybe with the alcohol problem Australia has, especially binge drinking, some drastic measures might be needed. You may have your own story of the battle with the bottle, in particular with what's called our binge drinking epidemic. Maybe it's your battle, maybe a friend or family member. Who knows, your story, if you're up to sharing it with us, might be a wake-up call, even a defining turning point to help someone else. We'd love to hear from you with your story, 1300 40 2020. The director of the Dalgano Institute is Shane Varco, and he joins us now on Open House. Shane, welcome.
Thank you, Lee. Happy to be here.
Very good of you to join us. Let's start with some of the facts and figures.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an issue is it, is this binge drinking today, Shane?
Well, binge drinking for the teenager, but particularly for the sort of that 18 to 24 demographic, or let's say the 16 to 24 demographic, has been steadily increasing probably over the last 5 to 10 years. And the reason it's getting so much attention at the moment is and starting to see that attention have a positive impact is that it's escalated to a point where it was, as the statistics you've previously mentioned, were creating some serious concerns. We're not just talking about lost potential. We're not just talking about damage and violence and maybe even crime, but people's lives and young people's lives needlessly wasted. And was getting at one stage there, we're seeing newspaper upon newspaper report of drunken car wrecks and the roadside shrines with bottles of Beam and Jack Daniels and flowers. It's just disturbing. And so we're seeing that impact really starting to rattle the Australian community, and that's why these issues have become more prominent.
Especially when you consider that there are five kids, teenagers, alive tonight who will not be alive next weekend because of binge drinking.
Well, that's certainly some of the data that we've been privy to. It's come out in the last couple of years and across the nation. And that's because that data was tallied and certainly monitored and put on the table. That's woken a few people up. So there's been some initiatives to start to try and drop that back, which we are now starting to see, which is great. But yeah, exactly. Five teenagers that have died needlessly from violence, from car accidents predominantly, but also from exposure. Things like just wandering off to a paddock after a party. And one incident that I'm aware of personally, that the young lad just died of exposure because he was alone in the paddock after a party. And tragedy, absolute tragedy.
Shane, away from the statistics, getting practical, why is binge drinking so bad? And why is it, say, over the past decade or so much worse?
Well, that's a huge question. And to answer that would take, a good hour and a half, which we don't have, obviously. But from our perspective, certainly the Dalgano Institute, we've had a long history, over 150 years, our predecessors as well, with dealing with the attending issues around this. So it's not just the availability and accessibility and permissibility of alcohol use, which is certainly a problem. You reduce supply, you reduce the damage done to young people, but it's the demand factor that's increased quite remarkably in the last probably last 20 years, but we've seen it just escalate with these sort of 16 to 24-year-olds in the last 5 to 10 years. Why? The concerns I have, you're looking at a culture that has got greater potential than perhaps any other generation's lived. We've got more entertainment than any other generation's lived. There's all sorts of other factors that enable this particular generation and this particular emerging generation to have incredible potential and impact. But they're disconnected from things that really matter. And one of the things that we do in our seminars is look not just at the how of alcohol use and other drug use, but particularly at the context issues, the why factor. What is it that is driving? What is it that is persuading or is seducing or intimidating young people in this space? And we're finding the lack of meaningful connection with life and with community, with culture, is a huge factor. Meaninglessness seems to be one of the single biggest factors, not the only one by a long shot, but one of the single biggest factors that we're bumping into. Kids are confused, they lack compasses, they lack maps, you know, metaphorically speaking, of course, compasses, maps. We've often, in our postmodern culture, we've burnt a lot of our maps, we've thrown away the compass, and we've torn up, you know, things that we felt were useful to us, and cut anchors. And as a result, kids are adrift, and they think that they're being entertained, but in fact they're just trying to assuage this kind of nagging sense of meaninglessness, which is growing in the culture. And when we engage young people, we're seeing more and more of that come out, and they're saying, well, yeah, that's kind of our space. And when they're given a context and given a bigger picture of what may be, they begin to actually look at that. So that's where demand reduction strategies are so important, to actually bring that those factors back to the table, so kids are engaging on a bigger level than just the next, you know, activity.
And again, it's important to emphasise you're not a bunch of wowsers.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Lee. I think it's interesting. The term itself has become hijacked.
Yeah.
Just to let you know what wowser actually means, when it was first coined, wowser literally means we only want social evils rectified.
That's interesting.
So when someone says, you're a wowser, I thought, well, don't you want social evils rectified as well? And they go, well, yeah. Also, well, you're a wowser as well.
Totally.
Join the club.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. I think this is not about, you know, the fun police, the killjoys that so often goes with the work that we're doing. We're certainly not on about that. We're certainly not prohibitionists and all that kind of thing. We're saying, hey, guys, we've got some serious attentive issues here that are not being addressed. We're simply masking them with substances and trying to wash away some of the dysfunctions with alcohol, which we know only adds to the burden of disease, non-communicable disease, only adds to the dysfunction of the culture. So, and young people are being caught up in this maelstrom, and when they unfortunately, tragically, something serious happens to them, or they pass away, and then their friends look at this, then we start to ask the hard questions: What happened here? How did we get here? Mm. And it's only in those tragic moments that they reflect and stop and look at the demand issues, and then start to rethink their choices. But we're trying to say before that, hey guys, let's look at the bigger picture. Let's get the conversation going. Let's talk about these issues so we're not having to find ourselves at another funeral or another hospital bed with someone's going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of their life.
Which is all extremely admirable, but how on earth, in a culture like Australia, with the advertising, the peer pressure, will you be able to lift the drinking age from 18 to 21?
Well, I suppose the first thing I want to say, Lee, is the consortium we're involved with, it's not just us, there's a number of, and a growing number of groups that are participating in this particular idea. We're starting a national conversation on this, because we're not saying that this is the only answer. There's a lot of things that we need to do, what I call judicial education, things like, you know, reducing supply, reducing outlets, the number of outlets, earlier closing times, certainly raising the drinking age. All these things we know statistically and from evidence-based will have a positive and proactive influence on the outcomes of misuse of alcohol. So that's a given. But I think demand reduction strategies are really, really important. Just for example, juxtapose with the quit campaign, which is around cigarettes. We all know it's all around tobacco particularly. Yeah. We know that the quit campaign isn't the slow down campaign. It isn't the moderate campaign. It isn't the, hey, back off a bit campaign. It's the quit campaign. So it's interesting that we've got with cigarettes, and it's a great campaign. We're all for it. It's the ultimate end is cessation. We know it can be a journey to that cessation, but it is absolutely clear goal. But it seems to be with alcohol, you know, and again, when was the last time you have to ask the question? When was the last time a cigarette caused a man to beat his wife to death with his fists? When was the last time a cigarette caused a car accident that it killed for and put someone in hospital for the rest of their lives? These things happen all the time with alcohol, yet we don't have the same veracity of assault against alcohol because it's so entrenched in our culture as the legal drug, as the central amenity to so much we do. But so what we're saying is that with the quit campaign, a good, strong public policy demand reduction strategy of explaining what's going on with alcohol, well, certainly reducing the advertising output, but taking away that sense of this is a right, this is normality, this is the Australian way. I think that's a key factor.
Yes.
And even as you've just mentioned that creates a real sense of entitlement to alcohol, which also then self-entrenches, which we're trying to bring that back. But we know that with good demand reduction strategies, great education, and when young people get on board with this, and more young people are, then we're starting to see that slow shift.
At the end of the day, do we, like smoking, you raised that, need the shock treatment that we've seen in that arena? Maybe that's what we really need to do to make a difference?
Well, certainly, Lee, we know that shock treatment can have an impact to a certain degree, but again, with our culture, and certainly with the visualizations in our culture, we become a little bit anesthetized to it. It becomes sort of passe. You know, we've just seen it all before. But I think when we connect not just images, but with, as you mentioned at the start, relationships and stories and understanding that, you know, asking the tougher question is not just if you drink, you could die, or if you drink, your friend will hurt themselves or hurt someone else. Important messages, yes, but with that, add the question, what's actually going on here, guys? Can we look beneath the surface? Can we lift the lid on this a little bit and say, hey, guys, what's really going on here? You know, who have we, you know, conceded to in this process of saying, look, we're going to preload, you know, with half a dozen before we go out. We're going to get as much alcohol in our system before we line up to go into a venue. When we get into a venue, we're going to hit it pretty hard when we get in there, maybe pop an ecchi as well or hit some caffeine as well so we can try and mask the impact of alcohol. And so where does that kind of thought process come from? You know, what's generated that and who's pushing that? Because we know from studies that have been done internationally that when peers, online and in person, peers negatively talk about their experiences with alcohol, negatively talk about the impact of alcohol in their life and the damage it's doing to them, we know from studies that have been done that actually, online and in person, influences others around them to slow down. We know that when peer input in that space is on display or in the marketplace, we know that actually reduces consumption. Obviously, the adverse is true as well. When people brag about their exploits and talk about the fun side of alcohol and don't mention the downside, that also impacts peer pressure as well. So it's the positive and negative peer pressure is really, really important here. But with good demand reduction strategies in place and young people owning the bigger picture issues, we can see shift more and more. We're actually starting to see it now, Lee. I think that's encouraging because we're getting young people involved in this as well. It's not just us old folks, the over 21s, trying to foist an inappropriate law on the younger ones. Mm-hmm. But we're saying, hey, let's get the conversation going, guys. Let's look at the big picture. Let's look at all the factors, both supply reduction and demand reduction, so we can see healthier changes.
So if people want to get behind you and support you in this, where can they go? What can they do, Shane?
Certainly. Look, the first place you can go to is our specific website, www.greaterrisk.com, which has got a number of different aspects, clearly focusing on alcohol and binge drinking in the young. You can also go to nobrainer.org.au, which is aimed specifically at young people and our education for young people in those areas. Those two websites will give you a little bit of insight and begin to open up the conversation for you. We have a petition going, which you can get on that space as well. But more importantly, we want young people to join the conversation. And, you know, with a reasonable... You could always get the clowns that jump in and, you know, want to have their two bobs worth that aren't interested in actually resolving issues. They just want to keep wasting their lives. But we're seeing more and more young people saying, we want a serious conversation about this. We want to talk about, you know, is it a good thing to raise the age? And if we do, what are some of the concessions like? Maybe we start driving at 16, you know, which I think is a wonderful idea. One thing America's got right in this area is that you get a license in America when you're 16, but legally you can't drink until you're 21. And that's a smart way of doing things, whereas in our culture, you get 18, you can drink, drive, shoot, vote, go to war, all in one hit. It's kind of not the most beneficially segued process into it, is it?
Shane Varco, I think you're really onto something. I wish you all the best in it. The two websites are greaterrisk.com and nobrainer.org.au.
Correct.
And we'll put the details up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Shane, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Lee. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.